The 11th Forum of the New York Herald Tribune on Current Problems features an address by the President of the United States. Here is the publisher of the Herald Tribune to introduce the President, Mrs. Ogden Reed.
Before the forum was undertaken this year, the chief executive of the nation was consulted about the kind of program that might prove useful. Obviously, current war problems could not be discussed, but we believed it important just now, not only as a means of heartening the war effort, but in preparation for the difficult task of reconstruction ahead, to clarify to some extent our ideas for the kind of world for which we are fighting. In closing the forum of 1942, I feel sure you will all wish to join with me in saluting our Commander-in-Chief, who has so brilliantly effected the start of a second front in North Africa. I have the great honor of presenting to you the President of the United States.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have always welcomed the opportunity to participate in the Herald Tribune Forum because I have always been interested in the public presentation of all kinds of national problems. In time of peace, every variety of problem and issue is an interesting subject for public discussion. But in time of war, the American people know that the one all-important job before them is fighting and working to win. Therefore, of necessity, while long-range social and economic problems are by no means forgotten, they are a little like books which, for the moment, we have laid aside in order that we might get out the old atlas to learn the geography of the battle areas. In time of war, your government cannot always give spot news to the people. Nearly everybody understands that, and the reason for it. This means that those relatively few people who do have the facts from all over the world, not only every day, but every hour of every day, are somewhat precluded from discussing these facts publicly, except in the most general of terms. If they did, they would almost inevitably say things that would help the people who are trying to destroy us. In reverse, those who are not in possession of all the news must almost inevitably speak from guesswork based on information of doubtless accuracy. Though they do not know the facts, and therefore the value of their statements becomes greatly reduced. Nor must we, in the actual progress of the war, lend ears to the clamor of politics or to criticism from those who, as we know in our hearts, are actuated by political motives. The fact that this type of criticism has done less harm in the United States than might be expected has been due to the good old horse sense of the American people. I know from a somewhat long experience in wartime as well as peacetime that the overwhelming majority of our people know how to discriminate. How to discriminate in their reading and in their radio listening between informed discussion and verbal thrusts in the dark. I think you'll realize that I have made a constant effort as Commander-in-Chief to keep politics out of the fighting of this war. But I must confess that my foot slipped once. About 10 days before the late election day, one of our aircraft carriers was torpedoed in the Southwest Pacific. She did not sink at once, but it became clear that she could not make port. She was therefore destroyed by our own forces. We in Washington did not know whether the enemy was aware of her sinking, for there were no Japanese ships near enough to see her go down. You will realize, of course, that the actual knowledge of the loss of enemy ships has a definite bearing on continuing naval operations for some time after the event. We, for instance, know that we have sunk a number of Japanese aircraft carriers, and we know that we have bombed or torpedoed others. We would give a king's ransom to know whether the latter were sunk or were saved, repaired, and put back into commission. However, when we got news of the sinking of this particular ship, a great issue was being raised in the Congress and in the public vehicles of information as to the suppression of news from the fighting fronts. There was a division of opinion among responsible authorities. Here came my mistake. I yielded to the clamor. I did so partly in realization of the certainty that if the news of the sinking were given out 2 or 3 weeks later, it would be publicly charged that the news had been suppressed by me until after the election. Then, shortly thereafter, protests came in. Protests from the admirals in command in the Southwest Pacific and at our great base in Hawaii, on the ground that in all probability the Japanese Navy had no information of the sinking, and that handing them the information on a silver platter, although we were careful not to reveal the name of the carrier, still gave to the Japanese a military advantage which they otherwise would not have had. This confession of mine illustrates to the people of this country the fact that in time of war, the conduct of that war with the aim of victory comes absolutely first. They know that not one of their inalienable rights is taken away through the failure to disclose to them for a reasonable length of time facts. Facts that Hitler and Mussolini and Tojo would give their eye teeth to learn. Facts, therefore, become paramount. Facts that cannot be told to the public at the time, as well as facts that can and should be told at all times. The posters that tell you loose talk costs lives do not exaggerate. Loose talk delays victory. Loose talk is the damp that gets into the powder. We prefer to keep our powder dry. We have a gigantic job to do, all of us, together. Our battle lines today stretch from Kiska to Murmansk, from Tunisia to Guadalcanal. These lines will grow longer as our forces advance. Yes, we have an uphill fight, and it will continue to be uphill all the way. There can be no coasting to victory. During the past 2 weeks, we have had a great deal of good news, and it would seem that the turning point of this war has at last been reached. But this is no time for exultation. There is no time now for anything but fighting and working to win. A few days ago, as our army advanced through North Africa, on the other side of the world, our Navy was fighting what was one of the greatest battles of our history. A very powerful Japanese force was moving at night toward our positions in the Solomon Islands. The spearhead of the force that we sent to intercept the enemy was under the command of Rear Admiral Daniel J. Callahan. He was aboard the leading ship, the cruiser San Francisco. The San Francisco sailed right into the enemy fleet, right through the whole enemy fleet, her guns blazing. She engaged and hit 3 enemy vessels, sinking one of them. At point-blank range, she engaged an enemy battleship, heavily her superior in size and firepower. She silenced this battleship's big guns and so disabled her that she could be sunk by torpedoes from our destroyers and aircraft. The San Francisco herself was hit many times. Admiral Callahan, my close personal friend, and many of his gallant officers and men gave their lives in this battle. But the San Francisco was brought safely back to port by a lieutenant commander, and she will fight again for her country. The commander of the task force of which the San Francisco was a part has recommended that she be the first of our Navy's vessels to be decorated for outstanding service. But there are no citations, no medals, which carry with them such high honor as that accorded to fighting men by the respect of their comrades in arms. The commanding general of the Marines in Guadalcanal, General Vandegrift, yesterday sent a message to the commander of the fleet, Admiral Halsey, saying, "We lift our battered helmets in admiration for those who fought magnificently against overwhelming odds and drove the enemy back to crushing defeat. Let us thank God for such men as these. May our nation continue to be worthy of them throughout this war and forever."
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard the President of the United States. And now our national anthem. To thank Brown and Williamson, the makers of Raleigh Cigarettes, for relinquishing part of their time of the Red Skelton program in order that you might hear the special program that's just been concluded. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Raleigh Cigarette Show, starring Red Skelton.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How are you, Truman?
Hello, Red. Say, Red, how'd you like the party Mr. Raleigh gave the other night?
Oh, it was just peachy.
Did you like the sandwiches?
Oh, just peachy.
And the drinks?
Peachy.
And did you like the girl I brought for you?
She was a little fuzzy, too.
Well, Red, we had fun when we went to the fight at the American Legion Stadium, anyway.
Yeah, say, Harriet, did you enjoy the fight the other night?
Oh, I certainly did, Red. Say, what was that thing that fell out of the fighter's mouth when he was hit on the jaw?
Oh, that was his mouthpiece.
Oh, gee, that lawyer will work anywhere to make a dollar, won't he?
Say, you know, Wonderful Smith used to be a fighter. Hey, come here, Wonderful.
Wonderful, did you used to be a fighter?
Why, yes, ma'am, Miss Harriet. I'll never forget my first fight.
What happened?
Well, I ran out on the canvas, and the next thing I knew, I was part of it.
Well, when you fought Wonderful, did you stand back and box like Jim Corbett, or did you get in there and slug like Dempsey?
No, I ran like Romo.
Well,
Look, Wonderful, were you ever carried out of the ring on stretchers?
No, I used to have silver handles sewed onto my shorts.
Well, you know, I used to be a pugilist.
A what?
A pugilist. Pugilist, you know, P-U...
Yeah, that's you. You a fighter? You know, Red, I can't picture you as a fighter.
Listen, I'm in pretty good shape, Truman, considering I was very puny when I was a baby.
Yeah.
In fact, I was so puny they were going to drown me.
Well, why didn't they?
They were ashamed to be seen carrying me down to the river.
I was punchy once. But I'm terribly muscular now.
You are?
Yeah, here, feel my right arm.
Let's see. Hey, those shoulder pads are losing weight.
Now feel my left arm. Now get a load of that chest.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, what do you think?
I'm sorry, I can't give you more than 4 cents a pound. Operator, this is J. Newton Numskull.
Deposit a nickel, please.
Okay.
Was that a nickel?
No, I was just turning in some scrap.
What number do you want, please?
I want to talk to my wife. I got the number here.
What's her number, please?
Don't be silly. She hadn't had a number since she was paroled.
Pardon me, sir. I'll get your number for you.
Would you?
Yeah, operator, give me golden.
What was that prefix, please?
Golden. Like the more golden tobaccos you can see in Raleigh cigarettes. You know, the more golden tobaccos that experts agree are choicer, more expensive.
You'll have to call information.
That's right. For your information, golden means sunshine. And warm sunshine gently ripens the 31 rich golden tobaccos that are blended into Raleigh cigarettes for unrivaled richness, smoothness, mildness.
Oh, just a moment, mister. You're taxing my patience.
Sure, I know there's a new cigarette tax. Yes. But with Raleigh cigarettes, you get valuable golden coupons worth 1.5 times as much as the recently added tax. They're redeemable for cash, 0.75 cents each. That's around a dime dividend when you buy Raleigh's by the carton. Raleigh coupons may also be redeemed for war stamps. Yes, and for dozens and dozens of handsome luxury premiums.
Just a moment. I better get my wife myself. Hello, operator. Now, she's gone.
Sure, she's going to get the pack with the coupon on the back. Raleigh cigarettes.
Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we celebrate a birthday. 1 year ago tonight, we introduced to the air for the first time a mean little boy called Junior. So tonight we're going to look back and see what would happen if he'd have thought of all of his escapades in one night. So, Harriet, you be my mother, and I'll be the mean little kid. Mummy, Mummy, we're going to starve.
Why, Junior?
Well, you know that turkey we got for dinner?
Yeah.
Well, Pop picked all the feathers off of him, and then he jumped out of the pan and ran away.
Oh, don't be silly. He's in the oven.
I knew I would find out where he was.
You know, I kind of sorry we killed that old turkey.
You are?
Yeah, but he put up a great fight, though, didn't he? 3 times he took the axe away from Pop.
Now, Junior, don't bother me.
Okay.
I'm busy cooking.
All right.
Wait a minute. Where did you get that black eye?
I was playing Peep and Tom.
What happened?
I peeped when I should have come.
Oh, go play, Junior.
Okay, I will run around the room a couple of times. Get a little exercise. Whoop! Hey, Mummy, I found me roller skate. Oh, somebody at the door. I will go see who it is. Somebody at the door. Somebody at the door. Hello, who sent you, Joe?
Hello, son.
Hey, what you selling?
Nothing.
What you collecting for?
Nothing.
Who you got a warrant for?
No one.
I'm sorry, bub. You got the wrong house.
Oh, Junior, why did you slam the door in that man's face?
Oh, wouldn't you like to know?
Good morning. I'm awfully sorry.
Is your husband home?
Uh-oh, the FBI. I better tell Pop to shut off them printing presses.
Printing presses?
Yeah.
Well, what's he printing?
I can't tell you. But he sure has those pictures of Washington and Lincoln down pretty good.
Junior, now you get in the other room.
Okay. Oh, look, the window is up. I think I will crawl out and eavesdrop. Well, what do you know? They washed her. I thought it was over.
Junior, what did you break?
Meow, meow.
That darn cat, he breaks more things.
It always works. Boy, oh, boy. Hey, one for your life, one for your life. I just put a firecracker in the goldfish bowl. That'll teach them to make faces at me. Hey, Mummy, can I have a walnut?
Well, just one. Dinner will be ready pretty soon.
Okay, I will bite it open. Well, there goes the last of me baby teeth. Hey, Mummy, look what I learned today. I can slide down the banister and turn around halfway down. Watch me.
Now, you stop that. You want to fall on your head and put a dent in the floor?
Don't worry, I won't do that no more.
Why not?
I was going south, and I met a splinter going north.
Go out and finish dinner.
Okay.
You sit in that chair and don't let me hear one peep out of you.
No, I want to go with you.
No.
Now, you let me go with you or I will tell.
You'll tell what?
I will tell everybody you used to be a barmaid.
Oh, I was not.
Oh, no. Hey, Queenie, 2 beers.
Coming right up.
Shake it!
Now, Junior, you sit in this chair like I told you.
Okay. Oh, you broke me with a back. You broke me with a back. You threw me in a chair and broke me with a bat.
I couldn't break your back on that chair. It's upholstered with pillows.
Sure, it's tough, isn't it, Mom? Hey, Mummy, if you let me go with you, I will be good.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
But just because I trust you. Because you wouldn't say that if you didn't mean it.
She don't know me very well, does she, boy?
Well, come on.
Okay.
Oh, wait till I get the milk off the porch.
Okay. Here, let me carry it.
No, I'll carry it.
No, I want to carry it. Okay, you can carry it.
Oh, Junior!
Don't you hit me. Uh-oh, somebody back at the door. Somebody up at the door. I will go. Howdy.
Well, what a pleasant smile.
Who's smiling? I got a banana in my mouth, sideways.
Sonny, will you tell your mother I'm here to collect the rent?
Oh, the rent. Uh-huh. Hey, Mummy, Simon LeGree's here. Hey, come on in. The new Esquire just came. Got some pretty nice cartoons, too.
Oh, do you like Esquire?
Sure. I ain't always going to be widow, you know.
Good morning.
Good morning. I was just talking to your little boy. He sure is healthy.
Yes, he is now.
Yes.
But he was pretty ill when he was a baby.
Yes, I was.
We thought we were going to lose him.
Yeah, but they didn't take me far enough out in the woods.
Won't you sit down?
Thank you.
I'll be right back.
Yeah, make yourself at home. Take off your shoes. Do you drink?
Why, yes.
Very bad habit. Very bad habit. Well, here I is, all alone. Took a long time, but here I is. Oh, look, the landlord left his car out here. I think I will get in and sit down. Oh, boy.
Oh, look, he left the keys in the car. I all by myself, too. If I do, I get a whipping. I do it. I got calluses anyway. I got to learn to drive sometime. I just turn it on and press on. I'm moving.
What happened? Are you hurt?
That depends on what you're going to do to me.
Oh, look at my car.
Nice hunk of salvage, if you ask me, Bob.
Oh, Junior, get in the house.
Okay.
Why are you so mean?
I don't know. Maybe it's because I don't have a little brother to play with.
Oh. Junior, would you like to have a little brother to play with?
Well, if it's all the same to you, I just soon have a pony.
Look, dear, will you do me a favor? I want you to take this pumpkin pie next door to Mrs. Denny.
Now, she ought to know better than that.
Now, be careful, because it's got whipped cream on the top.
Okay. Oh, boy, don't that look good. I will carry it like a bowling ball. Oh, boy.
I wonder if he'd be as mean if I hadn't had that witch doctor when he was born.
Here I is back. I think I'm going to go up and wipe me with a face and take a nap.
Why, don't you want to eat?
Now, for some reason, I ain't hungry.
Hello? Why, Mrs. Denny, I sent that pie over by Junior.
Trouble in the front.
Oh, now I'm beginning to understand.
Now there'll be a little trouble in the rear.
Junior, come here.
Put that shillelagh down and I will.
Come here.
You will never take me alive!
Junior, what happened to that pie?
Now, wait a minute. Let's not get nosy, Mom.
Did you eat that pumpkin pie, Junior?
Nope, only half of it, the punk part.
Why didn't you eat all of it?
Well, what do you think I ate, a pig?
What did you do with the part you didn't?
Well, I put a hunt over in this pocket.
Oh, now you're going to get it.
What'd you do that for? I had a hunt in that pocket, too.
Hey, fellas, you pipe smokers, here's a word about uniforms. Pipe smokers, Sir Walter Raleigh has given the tin off its pack to help win the war. Now it comes to you fully protected in its new Home Guard uniform. Same familiar orange and black design, but free of metal. And, of course, in keeping with its vital role in providing a peaceful pause from war work, Sir Walter Raleigh is rich and mild, smoothly satisfying. Blended in a masterful manner from Extra Choice Burleys, Sir Walter Raleigh is flavor-packed with a mellow, nut-like goodness, pleasingly aromatic. Tonight, try the quality pipe tobacco of America, Sir Walter Raleigh. Remember, we'll all be back again next Tuesday at the same time. Red Skelton, Ozzie Nelson and his orchestra, Harriet Hilliard, Wonderful Smith, and yours truly, Truman Bradley. In the meantime, listen to the Tommy Dorsey Show tomorrow night over most of these same stations. Until next Tuesday, then.
This is Red Skelton saying goodbye now, and thanks for listening. And to save gas, share your car.
Red Skelton is heard on this program through the courtesy of the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios. This program has been broadcast to the armed forces overseas and has come to you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.